That's right. We're here to talk about an amazing comic book superhero movie that's made by DC. What?
Yeah, this is uncommon for us.
Shazam just recently got its big debut, and I think it's been well received, certainly by critics. Everybody. Audiences and us, the morons who can't speak at Nonpro. I'm Frank. I'm joined by James and Al, and we're going to talk about Shazam. Spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about it with full spoilers.
I'm really excited because this was a DC movie that I surprisingly enjoyed.
Since I led with the shade on DC, we should probably address that. I've recently tried to start watching the DCU movies, the DC Extended Universe, which I guess starts with Man of Steel.
Yeah, it does.
That's probably where it goes. And I don't remember exactly how it started in my head, but I've never been super excited by any of those movies, and none of them really did much for me. I kind of wanted to see Aquaman, haven't yet to see it.
Yep.
I only recently started catching up. I got as far as Justice League, and I haven't even seen that yet, which is absurd.
I'm such a
comic book fan. Why?
Yeah, we've talked about this multiple times about Frank like driving to work in Batman underwear, being like,
exactly,
man, why have I not seen Justice League?
Like, there is a Justice League movie, and I haven't seen it. But that's just the reality of the situation. For whatever reason, it hasn't really captured my imagination as much as the Marvel movies have. Although I have to say, this might be changing now, because Shazam was amazing.
It was really good. I guess I really had wanted to see the movie. I thought the trailers really did a good job of selling kind of what Shazam was going to be, kind of more fun and more upbeat and a turn away from the Snyder tale, you know, of the DCEU, which, I mean, to be fair, they've been kind of starting to push away from since Wonder Woman, but Shazam felt like full on like move away from that, right? And I think that's kind of what got me into the theater, and let me say I was not disappointed.
No, not at all. I definitely made a huge turn from the very dark grittiness of the earlier DCEU films and made this very just kind of like, you believed that Billy Batson,
you could believe a boy can fly.
Yeah, pretty right? much.
It doesn't have the grimness that the other DCU movies do have. It, down to the music score, like, it's not that weird kind of strange guitar riff that's been following the DCEU since at least Batman versus Superman. It was even in Wonder Woman. So it's like, there is, as James said, they have never made a full turn away from that aesthetic until this movie. They've made half steps. I actually kind of enjoyed Suicide Squad. I got that far, and it was fun for what it was. It was a little weird in parts, but this movie was like, we're going to full stop, and this is going to be its own thing, yet somehow still be in the DCEU. That's what the first thing I want to talk about is. This isn't me just saying, hey, I'm not a big DCEU fan, but this movie was good. This movie makes me want to care more about the DCEU because of the way they bring in those elements.
In a very strange way, this almost works as a great introduction to that universe, as a lot of the characters are very much aware of the other superheroes in that universe.
Right. What better way than having kids being really excited about a world they live in with superheroes?
Yep.
And the cool thing about that is it also files off some of the abrasiveness. Like, it bothers me to watch a superhero movie where people die. I know we could quote Zack Snyder. This is not supposed to be like, I'm not targeting the people who enjoy those films. I'm glad you like them. I really am. But for me, it's like, I don't necessarily want to see a city collapse every time a movie happens.
Yeah.
For example, even like Ant-Man and the Wasp better than I do some of the more dark Marvel movies. It's just, you know, different strokes for different folks. And with a character like Shazam, having it about kids who are excited about the world that they're in, who are hopeful yet kind of downtrodden, perfect. And the little teasers that they exist in a wider world is what really makes it feel real.
And I like that the kids are very believable as kids. Like, they behave very much as children and not as how Disney would have you believe children act in a weird way, or they're not cartoonified to the other extreme where they're just kind of weird mean bullies for no reason. Like, it's their...
What about the weird mean bullies for no reason?
No, they felt kind of believable as just jerks.
Everybody did. Yeah.
Yeah, they were fine. And then they had a car in high school. All right, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. But it was it worked for what it was. But it was still, they talked like kids, they were mean like kids, and they were also kind of charming and innocent in the way same way kids were. Like the little sister who was like really like taken aback about, like, oh, it's Santa. Like, yeah, like no. it was like so
Santa was the number one character I enjoyed in that movie. He's my favorite. He's my breakout character. That
yeah,
was
he was great. Bring him back for the sequel and just be like, oh no, have not
him,
again.
Have him be the narrative thread that connects the rest of the DCU from now on. Just have a Santa.
I was going to say, if you're talking about the kids being believable, I'll even jump over to the villain. I'll be honest, you're in his situation where everybody's telling you you're nothing, and then somebody's like, nope, you might be something, and then they're like, nope, wait, never mind. I don't know, I might become obsessed and evil too. Like, I feel like I see how that happens.
Yeah, it wasn't so much like, and it wasn't even that he said you're not anything. It's like you have this potential to be something, but I don't necessarily, I don't want to run that risk. So yeah. It was very weird.
No, he is. You are not worthy. The wizard Shazam says that directly to Dr. Savannah as yeah. Baby. That's messed up.
Yeah, it is.
Let's do a little bit of like a wide like overhead look on this. We have to talk about the geeky elephant in the room. Shazam out in theaters within weeks, a week of Captain Marvel being in theaters. What a time to be a geek.
Yeah,
this was like. When I was young, this was like a deep cut. Like, did you know that there was actually more than one Captain Marvel? Like, you'd always, like, this is, you proved your geek worth by knowing about the various lawsuits that happened, which by now I'm sure everyone listening to this already knows that there was, you know, Shazam was the original Captain Marvel.
Back with Fawcett Comics before it was absorbed by DC.
Et cetera, and the lawsuits and what have you. So what a time to be alive. Beyond that, the cast, super strong, from the kid actors, the entire Foster family was amazing. The Foster family as a unit was great.
Yes.
So aspirational and so, like, loving.
All hands on deck.
Them.
I was like, oh!
It's so good.
Yeah.
Zachary Levy was really compelling as Shazam, as, like, this big bumbling kid in a
adult body, yeah.
Right? Mark Strong did a wonderful job as Dr. Savannah, which some people will argue because he's a lot more... This is a much more buff version of this classic villain.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's the first movie. I'm sure he got his butt kicked and came back. All the little things that they did in this film to make it feel enjoyable.
And comic booky,
right?
Yeah.
So good. So absolutely wonderfully good. So, yeah, I guess we should talk about...
Some of the characters, I guess, right?
Yeah, let's talk about some of the characters.
So, I'm going to say, I both love and hate Billy Batson in this movie.
Really?
Yeah.
You discussed this during that trailer dump when we first discussed Shazam.
Yeah, because one of the biggest things I like about Captain Marvel was always that Billy Batson was kind of like literally the friendliest person in the world, mm-hmm. Who would pass by like hookers on the street and just be like, "Oh, you're looking nice today, Miss Kitty," and just like kind of like and like, "Oh, hey, Billy, you're getting late for school." And
just want people to sample this part of the podcast. Yep, the famous Fawcett comic character, Billy Batson, who would pass hookers on the street and call her Miss Kitty. Go on.
Like, well, that was what her name was. But it was like, but he was just literally the nicest kid in the world. And that was sort of why he got picked. Because like, he was like pure of heart. He was like this. Yeah. But, like, and they changed that just enough for me to be perturbed by it, I think is the best way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Like, I get that.
You went, oh, dear.
I was like.
Heavens.
They didn't make it so that they put the wizard in a position where he like, okay, well, Savannah's got the evil eye thing and the seven enemies of man. Oh, sorry. They did say the seven deadly sins actually in this movie, not the seven enemies of man. And he needs to pick a champion now. So Batson kind of takes over the mantle of it. But I do miss that worthiness of the character that even, but Billy eventually does earn it as the movie goes on. And I like his journey a lot in this film.
Right.
For the groibles that I might have with the character and the differences from the comic book version, for all those problems, the journey that this character takes is so compelling.
I think that helps make the character believable. I'm not saying that the character is not believable in the comics, but I think things that play well in comics don't always play well on the big screen. And I think if you had some kid who was just always trying to act like perfect the entire time, I think you'd come across with the Disney kid character that I think you're afraid of seeing. So I think Billy's journey feels so very natural. I also really like that Billy's journey is so tied in this, you know, and I don't know if this is a thing in the comics, but so tied to the foster home. There are so few stories we get about the importance of foster care.
Yep.
That this feels really like a really great, you know, to have such a big
positive,
you know, a
yeah.
big positive movie talking so well about foster care, you know what I mean? And the good aspects of it.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. When Freddie says immediately upon when Billy shows up, he's like, they seem nice, but they're really horrible. And there's a moment where there's a comedy beat and he's like, no, I'm just kidding. They're great. That was amazing. Yeah. So I totally get what Al's saying about the about Billy Batson. But like James said, yeah, I think there needs to be an arc for this, for you to care about this character. He can't just come out of the gun like, well, I'm sure you could make a movie where he immediately gets his Mary Sue wish fulfillment and could do everything and is a great guy. But I think it's more captivating to see him not do a good job, be troubled,
yeah.
and then eventually become, at the end of the movie, more or less the Billy Batson / Captain Marvel / Shazam that we all love.
Yep, the lightning from my hands bit.
Plus you get some good old-fashioned Spider-Man 3 moments where a superhero is dancing down a sidewalk doing stupid stuff.
But it is very, like, sort of kiddish, and, like, I'm another random, not so much a complaint, but I think it's interesting. You see him as the kid try to adult up. Like, he often just tries to be very sort of, not melodramatic or anything like that, but just very, like, he's stoic. But when he has the superpowers and he has the red suits, it's like, it feels like he can let it, like, for lack of a term, let his hair down a little bit and just kind of, like, be goofy and stupid and fun. There's that moment when Freddy's like, you more like this. You mean I'm not a, I'm not an asshole? Like, yeah.
yeah, absolutely. What about, we talked about it a little bit, that villain. We got Dr. Savannah. I do have major problems. I mean, I'm not, I guess Shazam the Wizard, for lack of a better word, we'll just call him the Wizard.
Yeah.
The Wizard is not necessarily what we would classically call a good guy.
No!
He points out the kid is like, yeah, you are totally lacking. And we don't really have, we're not told what it is. I guess the assumption is that even Billy Batson would have been, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, my assumption in the film is that even Billy Batson would have been deemed unworthy had the Wizard not been, like, already with one foot out the door.
Yeah.
I think that was it. I think, which in a way is a very liberating take. It's saying, hey, all of us, we all have problems. We are, none of us are perfect. Not even the Billy Batson from Fawcett Comics who was perfect. Like, none of us are perfect, but if you give us a chance, some of us will, you know,
yeah,
exceed
because,
and do
because
well.
Every person fails the test, which is, can you ignore the seven deadly sins or ignore the eye that's going to, you know,
yeah.
grant you the power? And Billy doesn't get to go through that, but we do see him at the end of the film hold the thing in his hand and, like, have that gag where he's like, oh, did you think I was going to put this in my eye? That's gross. Right. And it's like, to a certain extent, you have to wonder, like, was he pure of heart all along, or was it just this journey that he went on being this hero and eventually, like, accounting for these responsibilities yeah. that got him to that point where it's like, no, the evil can't tempt me anymore.
It's very complicated because I don't know if he really resisted any evil power, because he already saw all the horrible repercussions of having that power
yeah.
and how it wasn't really power. It was a puppetry. And he also already had superpowers. So I don't think he was resisting anything towards the end, because he was like, oh, no, I don't want this. I got much better powers on my own. I'm cool. I'm good. Look how gorgeous I am. Yep. I don't think he's going to want to be a freaky one-eyed, no offense, Mark Strong, but you know, I was going to say Boldy.
Yep.
But yeah, so I'm not sure. It is a mixed metaphor. I think the best lesson, if any, is how how he shared his power and his responsibilities and everything with his family. I think that is a more powerful moment.
Can we talk about that? Because it is my favorite.
Yeah, we can return back to Savannah in a second. Let's go over this.
I knew only so much about Shazam, mostly from his revival in the late 2000s, I think, when they rebooted the DC comics.
Yeah, the New 52. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I enjoyed it, but, you know, and I was kind of familiar somewhat with his family, but, you know, when they introduced the characters and I recognized maybe some of them as kind of being like the right people for that, you know, like I thought, oh, man, that's a cute, you know, like throw out or whatever. But they're not going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, like, not you don't do that. Like,
not in the first movie, yeah.
Yeah. You don't do that in the first comic book movie. And then when he figures it out and he tells them all to grab the thing and say his name, I'm like, no way. It just blew my mind.
All
like,
hands
this
on
is
deck.
Sort of, this yeah. is this, you know, and it's interesting because, like, I wonder if it's just because we've progressed in the way we do comic book storytelling now, and that's as a thanks to Marvel and all these other comic book movies we've had. But, like, I feel like, again, like 5-10 years ago, if you did something like that, people would have been like, that's ridiculous, you know? And here it just felt so right, you know? It
I
just,
think people
it,
are making...
the best part of the movie.
Yeah, yeah, they're definitely... it seems as if, and DC was a little slow out of the gate to do this, they're taking more chances mm-hmm. on the stories they're telling, which is weird, because DC was actually very cutting edge on most things, but it seemed like it got one particular style and then stuck with it for a while. Mm. Where, you know, Marvel took a couple more chances on weird things like Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man and the Wasp, things that were a little bit off that I think maybe we're going to be seeing. If superhero movies have any longevity to them at all, it's going to be if they adapt and are adaptable.
Yeah, and they're willing to try different things. And I have to say, like, I loved the personalities of all of those characters, even once they transformed. Like, all of them felt very distinct, and thank God those actors, like, really kicked it. And, like, I don't know what it is, but something about the green guy with the beard was just kind of, he felt very much like a, like, the kind of superhero I would be, which was just kind of like, all right, I got this. All right, I guess I'll go take care of this one. Like something would go wrong, and it would just be like, yeah. All right, no one else is doing it. I got
it. He's doing the layups. Yeah. I'd like to take a moment to talk about a couple of the Easter eggs, which are super fun in this movie.
Yeah.
Right? So, obviously, there's the things that are, like, obvious, though. The bullet, the batarang, the what have you. But there are newspapers in the behind the scene that paint the picture of the DCEU. That's yeah. cool. Obviously, the Mr. Mind thing that comes in.
Mid-credit scene was gold.
I thought all we were going to get was the worm moving in the Cave of Wonders, or the Cave of Responsibilities.
The Rock of Ages. The Rock yes. of Eternity.
So, yeah, I kept thought that's all we were going to get, and then we got the extra little thing at the end.
Yeah, the little box cool. around. It was like, oh, my God!
Then the all the tigers throughout.
Yes!
Like, cool. They could. I'm glad they didn't do Talking Tony in there, but, like, I like that they suggested it. The Alligator Men, because of the various doors and all that.
Yeah.
They went to Fawcett High. I don't know if you noticed that. They were going to Fawcett High, which is a nice little Easter egg. There's a lot of great things in the entire movie. One of my favorite Easter eggs is not a comic book movie thing. It is the floor piano.
From Big, yeah.
And it was just, like, enough where he was like, hey, you know what this movie sounds a lot like? And it was just for a second. And I'm like, that's great.
That's all you needed, though. Like, and you had to reference it because it is essentially superhero Big.
You know what? You really didn't have to. I know what you mean, but you didn't have to. And I love that they did. Yeah. I love that they were like, you know what? This.
I love that entire scene, actually, in the toy store. Where, like, he's, like, just running away from the bad guy, and it's just so very intimidating. It's like, he's just not...
What an insane world that they don't really deal with much in Marvel, but
yeah.
they led with it. They're like, yeah, this is a world where Batman and Superman are real, and there are action figures.
Get it, Batman!
It's so odd. So odd.
Yeah. Going back to Savannah for 2 seconds, though. Like,
oh, you... Just, okay,
yeah, because I don't feel like we gave him his due. I really love that performance. I think it was just chilling, and I want to go back to that boardroom scene.
Oh, that's amazing. John Glover as father, beautiful. Beautiful. Like, their relation, I love it. Yep. Yes. Go on.
Yeah, but I love that whole entire exchange where it's just every downtrodden person who's grown up with just the siblings or a parent or any kind of guardian who just told you your whole life you were never going to amount to anything.
It's a different kind of revenge fantasy
yeah.
for a child, right? There's the revenge or fantasies for children who have issues with their parents. You could be Billy Batson or you could be Dr. Savannah,
yep.
right?
And Savannah had a family. Like, Billy didn't get one.
With issues with their family. Like, yeah. like they could either be there where, like, they, you know, he's resistant to his foster family. He's looking for this mother that may not exist. And on the other side, you've got a person who's had a family and
it was just miserable his entire life.
Yeah.
Like, but like that was such a weirdly satisfying scene because that the way Glover performs that, he's such a scumbag like throughout that entire film. You're like, when he gets it, you're like, yeah.
I don't know if anybody
else in that boardroom deserved it though.
I don't. Like, yeah, I'm not sure about any of that. I don't even know if John Glover does it. All right, Al. So I think this is a good time. Maybe we should talk about our favorite moments and our least favorite moments.
Yeah.
Let's go least favorite first. What's the thing you dislike the most? Al, you've already said yours with Batson, right? With Billy not being super pure.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's a moment in the film. I think what's my least favorite? I think the weird sort of conflict that he has with Freddy is probably like my least favorite moment in the film. Where like it's a valid conflict, but I don't feel like at any point in time they address it because it does be there's a moment where Billy says, like, I think this is starting to become all your thing. Like, you're telling me what to do. You're setting me on fire in a cardboard box. I mean, like, this is my superpowers. I got this. What's going on here? And then Freddy's pissed off because, like, he's lightning with my hands in, like, the middle of Philadelphia. And it's just, I mean, that's cool. But, like, both of you had a point, and it felt like only Freddy's point really got addressed. And I'm like, oh, come on, guys. Like,
they go straight into, like, the main conflict with the villain after that. So they don't really get any time to ruminate on it.
Yep.
How about you, James?
No, for me, it was that first act. It was slow, man. You know, as much as I enjoyed the world building, it just takes a while to get the movie started.
Yeah.
You know, which is something that I guess I'm not used to now because the Marvel films have so much established, you know, that we don't have to spend as much time with it, and the movies can just kind of kick off and really set the pacing straight. It's great. From the minute Billy gets his powers onward, the pacing picks up to a perfect pitch. But before that, I think I had issue with the pacing. So it is a good first 25, 30 minutes of the film. So,
yeah.
So I think that's fair. Maybe my least favorite part, and it's still better than some other examples we've seen out there in the wild, is some of the action sequences. From the beginning to the end, a lot of the superheroics really were just forgettable. Like, I can't remember too many moves that were really great. The funnier they were, the more likely it was memorable to me, but I wasn't watching Greatest American Hero, the movie. That probably will come out in a couple of years. But it's like I wanted, once you've inhabited these superpowered bodies and what have you, delivering a couple of amazing blows that are well coordinated by a body that's like supernaturally good at what you're doing, as opposed to like, you know, you suddenly are good at fighting. You know, there's a disconnect between once he became Shazam, he was still like Billy trying to puppet Shazam, and it was a little very awkward in some of those fights, and they were not very memorable for the most part. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I like Savannah the most, and that boardroom scene, is because I think if it weren't for his aggressiveness, his physical, you know, presence, it would be kind of a boring movie overall.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree. I do wish we had seen more mad science out of this mad scientist.
Sure, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my little minor problems with
it. He had magic science, but not quite.
Yeah.
One trick, right? It was just find the doorway to get there. Yeah, I agree. But one of my favorite things, speaking of finding the doorway, is the entire Rock of Eternity sequence. All of them. All the different things.
Yeah.
I love the set design in that place. I love the various seats of power. I love the Wizard Shazam. I love the seven deadly sins as statues speaking into the minds of people. Everything was amazing. The floating doors, all of it. It was brilliant. And the subway train that brought them there. Like, every little bit of this thing.
References to the seven realms and whatnot.
Yeah, it was astounding. The design on this movie, I am all in favor on, all in on.
I gotta say, I in contrast to your disliking of the fight scenes, I'm inclined to agree. It was Savannah just chasing him down, or just out and outright just beating him up because he just was more powerful, and Billy was, like you said, he was just puppeting Shazam at that point. But I think the finale of the film, actually, that's when everything sort of came together. I felt like the fight with the CGI monsters was fine. It like they were CGI goof monsters that like were out of Ghostbusters, you know, and I was so okay with that. I didn't mind it at all, and I felt like it worked. And whatever fight choreography you had with these dudes in awesome multicolored suits fighting monsters and creatures, it worked really great. And that exchange in the city sky when Savannah's
giving... You saying something? Never mind, we were over there. Yeah, that was great.
Yep.
Absolutely. James?
I think I already said my favorite moment, man. It's when we introduced Shazam's whole family with superpowers.
Oh,
I just blew my mind. I just would have never expected that was going to happen. You could have told me that was going to happen coming in, and I would have told you were lying.
Yeah, it was just such a good scene. I'm inclined to agree with it. I said this already, but I'll go ahead with James. I'll say it again. I loved all of them in that, like, in their grown-up forms. Mm-hmm. They all had charm and personality. I was scared to death that they were all going to just, like, because, you know, we had one named actor, and nobody else was really, like, someone that we were going to know. But right. They all, like, lived into those roles almost immediately, and were great.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun. So I guess all that's left is to review it. I definitely think it's a must watch. You go out and see it. If you're a fan of superhero movies, it's not the funniest movie out there, but it is very lighthearted. It's fun for the family kind of deal.
Yeah.
And it'll make you love DC movies again if you're a little on the fence about it. If you were into the grimdark, you may not find as much as you like, but there's some cool graphics in there for people who like monsters and deadly sins.
And also there's a pretty, like, realistic or gritty story concerning Batson and his parents and, you know, his mother. Yeah. That's a real life kind of story, even though it has a happy ending. Mm-hmm. You know, but like, he finds his real family was there all along.
Oh,
yeah.
And what about you, James?
Definitely a must watch. I loved this film, and I would highly recommend it.
I really, really hope that, I'm not saying that all the movies coming out after this are going to be Shazam spinoffs, but I do hope that they mix things up a little bit at DC and give us yet another franchise we could pour all our money into and wait until Disney buys them.
I would prefer I would prefer Shazam to be the comic relief in the next Justice League as opposed to Flash. I'd be much more interested to see him sort of like try and have like...
Taco commercial girl, why can't we have both?
Yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.